Protests against police violence have gripped the nation since the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. NSPR's Andre Bayek recently spoke with civil rights attorney James Cook, whose focus includes cases of alleged police misconduct, including cases in the North State. Cook grew up in Minneapolis and offered his views on the killing, the protests, and what should be done moving forward. I'll let Andre take it from here.
I first connected with James Cook for a story I was researching about new allegations of excessive force at the Butte County Jail. Cook is a civil rights attorney at the high-profile John Burris Law Firm out of Oakland, and he's representing an inmate at the jail who claims deputies assaulted him after he suffered from a seizure. As we talked about the jail case, I learned that Cook grew up in Minneapolis, and he was in the city at the time police killed George Floyd on Memorial Day. Cook and I recently caught up for a longer talk about race, policing, and what he thinks can be done to effect change. Here's how Cook says he learned about the killing of George Floyd.
So I was here in Minneapolis. I heard about it, like most of our community did, on Facebook. And the news hadn't picked it up yet. So it was on Facebook, and it was kind of going around that way. I learned about it that night. That was a Monday night, I believe. And then, you know, by the next day, by the next morning, I went up to the area, 30th in Chicago, where it took place. So, you know, I'm not too far from there. I'm about a mile or two from 38th in Chicago. And, you know, I was able to go up there the next morning. And again, I was going up there just to kind of check things out. And even if any of the family members were up there, just to, you know, sort of offer some advice, you know, not for pay or anything, but just advice on what the next steps would be regarding the lawsuit. But none of the family members was around at the time. It was mostly just people from the community venting and talking and you know, a few journalists. It hadn't become that big of a story yet.
I asked Cook for his opinion on why the story didn't immediately gain traction.
I think at the time, you know, the officers said what they always said. They said that he resisted arrest. They always say every single time, this person resisted arrest. It's always the decedent's story versus the officer's story. They almost always charge the person with, you know, whatever penal code, you know, constitutes resisting arrest. In California's PC 148. I don't know what it is right offhand in Minnesota, but if Floyd had lived and they just hurt him badly, they would have said that he resisted arrest and charged him with that particular penal code. So for about 12 hours, as usual, the media, and you know, probably most people hadn't really questioned it, but that video circulated and the public was able to see it and question what the officers were saying because, you know, you had visual information, you had visual confirmation. You know, it shows that girl, she took the video, she stayed on it the whole time. So you see 9 minutes, you know, basically, most likely got his windpipe crushed, but, you know, you could see where he, you know, urinated. And, you know, that's one of those signs that somebody's dying or close to dying. So I think that video basically contradicted everything the officer said.
That video showing how Floyd was killed with an officer's knee to his neck has sparked nationwide unrest with protests in all 50 states. I asked Cook why the response to this killing of a black person by police has captured the public's attention in ways other killings haven't. He says it's a convergence of things, including ongoing public debate and new awareness. And he didn't discount the activism of former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick.
I mean, you had black folks, right? Of course, they, you know, we know this has been happening to us for 400 years. And we know, okay? And then you have sort of progressives that aren't black, let's say progressive white people. But, you know, you have progressive minorities other and just minorities or other races that know that in general that, yeah, these things have happened. You're Asian, definitely you're Japanese, you know damn good and well. You're Chinese, you know that as the country was founded and you know the Chinese Exclusion Act, what they did to your people out west, Filipinos, anyone, right? Or Latinos, You know that anything that happens to black people happens to you. And you also know that you have a president who has used you as a political football and has actively fomented discrimination against you, right? You have progressive white people that are the millennials or they're people in my generation, Generation X, who grew up, you know, especially Generation X in sort of the first wave of integrated schools. They know that these things are happening. They know that there's inequalities. But, you know, the larger group, you know, they just didn't know. Then you had a big, huge debate that was sparked by Colin Kaepernick kneeling. And huge debate because, you know, sports, you know, is a microcosm of everything that happens in society. That put it in people's face and people are like, yeah, we don't believe him. Probably the reason why they're so much bigger is because you see what happened. You see what happened from beginning to end. And even though the police department tried to give us that redacted tape, I mean, even if you're a white person, an older white person who doesn't have those experiences, or a younger white person who just, you know, has never really been in an integrated environment or a non-homogenous environment where you've had friends or you've known a person who's known a person that these things have happened to or that has had to deal with racism that way. Now you've seen it. And now you have confirmation. And now you know Colin Kaepernick was right. And now you know, you're kind of like, damn, you know, all along, you know, I didn't listen. And then you see the riots and you're kind of like, you know, they're saying, do you believe us now? I mean, they wrote that on the precinct as it was burning. Can you hear us now? I'm torn about the rioting, you know. On the one hand, it's messed up. Like, people lost their jobs. I hate to see the businesses burn. But on the other hand, the rioting was necessary because they would have never arrested that cop. And we all know that. Now, the charges aren't going to really stick. The other three cops, we know that technically. But at least the arrest is a gesture. But they would not have arrested Chauvin if the third precinct hadn't burned down. And I can't say that I wasn't happy seeing that. It was sad to see that. You know, I'm not. I mean, I sue the cops. I make my living doing it. And, you know, I know damn good well not all cops are bad. And, you know, we need police and we need the order. And I think it's really stupid that the Minneapolis City Council is voting to defund them. That's BS. It's not vote to defund. You should vote just to make sure that, you know, that the critical milestones and training and those types of things are met. And I'll circle back around to that. But we need the police. We don't need certain cops, you know, to kill black people or kill minorities or kill poor white people and get away with it.
I asked Cook to take me through the work he's focused on these days. He says he's been giving interviews like the one he granted me. He's also still working on his cases, including cases of alleged police misconduct. He also noted a question people often pose to him.
You know, people always ask that question, well, what can I do? Whether it's what can I do as a white person or what can I do, period. And I say the same thing I always say. Talk about it. Now that you've seen it, like, talk about it with people and, you know, and talk it out. Because that's the problem is people don't want to talk. Like, basically, they go in there into their political corners and, you know, into their political universe, their Fox News or MSNBC universe, and they want to cut everybody off. Talk about it with people that don't agree with you and talk it out and try to talk civilly. That's number one. Number two, I always tell people, don't get out of jury duty. Serve on the jury. Now you've seen it. Now you know. Question authority. You know, if you think, if you're on a jury or in a grand jury and you think that somebody's going to be wrongfully convicted, hang it. You know, exercise your own independent thought. You can hang the jury. You have that power. If you're on a jury in a civil case where, you know, someone wants to be compensated because they're racially discriminated against at work, or they were sexually harassed, or they were, you know, wrongfully terminated, where the real underlying, and they're telling you that the underlying reason was based on race, don't just automatically assume that the person's playing the race card. Convince the other jurors to award this person. That's a way to make policy. Because the only thing that lawyers think about when they get into a case is, what's the end game? What's a jury going to say in this case? That's what we think about. So hang the jury. If you're in a civil case where the question is whether or not you're going to award officers, you're going to terminate them, and you want a policy decision made, award them. Convince the other jurors. Or hang the jury. You have that power. Like, people have the power. But generally, the problem is the people on the juries don't look like you and me. You know, they aren't progressive white people. They're, you know, they get stricken. They aren't black folks. They aren't Latinos. You know, they aren't any of the other racial minorities. And if they are, the very few that go on the juries, they get stricken.
Cook also raised another way that he believes could influence police policies and practices nationwide: extensive data collection.
Data collection would be a game changer. That would enable us to do, you know, what's called our Monell allegations, that there is a pattern in practice, that we can establish a pattern in practice, and we can basically not only sue the officers that did wrongdoing, but we could sue the administrators that did wrongdoing. And that would change a lot of things, because we'd hit them in financially, and we'd also be able to dictate how to move forward with the pattern of practice. But right now, every time we start litigation, the pattern of practice, the Monell argument, always gets stricken from the lawsuit, because there's no way we can really establish a pattern of practice without doing discovery, and can't get in the case and do discovery until, you know, so on and so forth. So we aren't able to make those changes. But we would be able to with just data collection if we had that, like, nationwide. But you know, municipality, so on and so forth.
I asked Cook about the type of data he'd like to see collected.
Anytime police make contact, stops, use of force, race, and we connect data regarding, you know, charges, and then data regarding whether or not the charges were dropped or stuck with them. We collect data based on the use of force and how much force was used on the continuum. You know, I mean, those things alone would spark huge reforms, I believe, no matter who's in the administration right now. And more so if we didn't just do it in just California, but we made it, if it was nationwide, part of the police post standards, police officers training standards, I mean, that would go a long way, make it more transparent. Because the big move was the body cameras. And not all departments enacted body cameras across the country. And then look, you know, let's face it, the body cameras, if you look at the general orders and that is the policies and procedures and the rules surrounding body cameras, you know, they're loose. And officers, for some reason, whenever the body camera footage doesn't benefit the officers, somehow the camera wasn't working or got turned off. Or, you know, like in one of my recent cases, they claim, oh, I wasn't turned off. But it just so happens, two of the officers that make contact with my client, somehow their body camera footage got turned off at the same time, and all of a sudden did not start until after the ambulance came. That's the kind of BS that happens. But officers should be fired if their body cameras weren't working. That's the bottom line. And we can't just rely on body cameras footage. We've got to rely on data. So that's part of the policy.
Cook told me that issues related to police misconduct include race, but also class, government spending priorities, and housing. He says all play a role in determining the type of police response a neighborhood can expect.
I'm a black attorney. I'm not, you know, as black attorneys, we always tell people, like Mr. Burr says, we don't have the luxury of our white colleagues to say, I'm specializing in one area of law. Yes, we're known for police misconduct, but we got to do every single type of law. Because black folks come to the unicorns, the one or two black attorneys, and so don't Latinos. Latinos come to us. Because as few black attorneys as there are, there's fewer Latino attorneys. In the Bay Area, there's more Asian attorneys, but I mean, Bay Area's got a huge Asian population. And again, there's subsets of the Asian community. So that's taken care of. But they still, poor Asian people always deal with police misconduct cases, and they come to us, okay? In a place like Chico, or, you know, start going up further, Butte County, all those places, you got a lot of poor white people. They come to us too. And again, you can, like I keep saying, whether it's Chico, Redding, Anderson, going up the list of cities where I've done these cases, Eureka, you can tie the lack of housing, the underfunded education to militarized police responses.
That was James Cook, civil rights lawyer at the law offices of John L. Burris out of Oakland, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek.